From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, is Joe Biden's pick for vice president a safe and energizing choice, as the New York Times headlines declared this morning? The Times analysis of Biden's selection of Senator Kamala Harris says that she is a conventional pick by some political standards, quote unquote. Harris's record would suggest that the reality is much different. Harris, the junior senator from California, has only been in the Senate for 3 years, but she has managed to be ranked now as the most liberal U.S. senator. As a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, she has made very clear her view on judges, and it's much different than the present administration. She has routinely attacked judges or nominees for their religious affiliation, their biblical views on human sexuality, on life, and a host of other issues. My first guest says Harris was a ringleader in one of, if not the most brutal, character assassination attempts in the history of Supreme Court nominations, the confirmation hearing of now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Molly Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist and author of Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, and the Future of the Supreme Court, joins us in just a moment. As the former Attorney General of California, Harris aggressively went after crisis pregnancy centers in her state's interstate using the state's deceptively named California Reproductive Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency Act. Harris and the state were sued by pro-life organizations who prevailed ultimately at the U.S. Supreme Court. While her views on abortion might energize the most rabid pro-abortion activists, they would appear far from safe. Are her views on abortion safe? Marjorie Dannenfelser, president, Susan B. Anthony List, joins us with more on that later here on Washington Watch. And while Harris has only passed one piece of legislation as senator, the St. Francis Dam Disaster National Memorial Act, she ranks at the top among her peers in the number of bills she has introduced and measures she has co-sponsored. She was one of the first to sign on to AOC's Green New Deal and the deceptively named Equality Act, which would torpedo the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Just how conventional are Harris's views? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, weighs in on that aspect of Harris's record. And finally, is Harris a conventional pick, or is she the result of capitulating to the Democratic Party's woke cultural warriors? Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati, joins me for that conversation. Also, we'll have an update from Pastor Rob McCoy in California, the Calvary Chapel pastor, who was in court yesterday for holding indoor services this past Sunday. Will his church continue to meet under the threat of jail time? We'll talk with him later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it's at T. Perkins. And let me remind you, men, there's still time. This coming weekend, we'll be having our Stand Courageous Men's Conference. It will be live streamed, so you can see it no matter where you are. You can participate, but you have to register. If you're in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area, you can come join us live in person. But if not, find out how you can host it in your home, in your church, or on your computer by yourself. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. And one more thing. Monday, we had the second of a three-part series on rethinking public education. We'll have the final program tomorrow as we look at various options for parents, charter schools, Christian schools, even starting schools in your church. Now, be sure and tune in as I'll be joined by former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. Do you know what launched her into politics, which ultimately led to her being a candidate for the President of the United States? Well, tune in tomorrow and find out. John Schilling, President of the American Federation for Children, Pastor Doug Wilson from Lagos, and Joseph Backholm, Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement here at the Family Research Council, will be a part of tomorrow's program. They'll join me as well. So tune in tomorrow for part three of Rethinking Public Education. All right, this is all over the news, so unless you just woke up from a 36-hour nap, you know that yesterday, former VP turned presidential candidate Joe Biden selected his own choice for VP in his selection of California Senator Kamala Harris that the Times, the New York Times, declared as safe and energizing, saying that it was a conventional pick. Now, safe, I doubt it. But it certainly may be energizing to the party's left wing, especially when it comes to the courts. Now, as we know, elections have consequences, and if the Democratic ticket is successful, one serious consequence would be what the courts would look like in America. Joining me now to talk about this is Molly Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist, and she is the co-author of Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, and the Future of the Supreme Court. Molly, welcome to the program. Molly, you with us?
I'm so sorry about that. It's great to be here with you.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. Let me just start with this. You track the Supreme Court. Obviously, you watched the Kavanaugh hearing very closely. You were there. You wrote about it. But let's talk about Harris, a former California Attorney General, member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, there for the confirmation of Kavanaugh. From her past, what can we tell about her judicial philosophy and the type of judges she would be a part of nominating?
Well, it seems that she was pretty clear about the nature of her opposition to Brett Kavanaugh, which was rooted firmly in her support of abortion. And she had a viewpoint that he would not be as supportive of abortion jurisprudence as has been done by the Supreme Court as she is. And so I'm not sure so much what the governing philosophy is other than the end being her focal point, but that she was pretty clear about it from the beginning that what she didn't like about him was that she worried he would not be as radically in support of abortion as she would prefer.
It would appear from how she conducted herself in that hearing that she would go to great lengths to pursue that top priority of promoting abortion, even if it meant character assassination.
Right. A lot of people focus on the horrible end to those hearings where it devolved into unsubstantiated allegations that were parroted throughout the media. They were actually pretty bad from the get-go. And from the moment President Trump nominated Brett Kavanaugh, a few Democratic senators really decided to campaign on that issue or use it as a launching pad for presidential ambitions. And she was chief among them. She was out on the steps of the Supreme Court the day after the nomination. Within minutes of the nomination, she was announcing her opposition to it long before she had reviewed his record. The first round of hearings, which was before any of these unsubstantiated allegations came out, she within 7 seconds interrupted Chairman Grassley to try and derail the proceedings. And that led to all of these arrests that were in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing room. And she tried to get then Judge Kavanaugh into a perjury trap where she tried to nail him for saying something. She failed at it, but it was really clear that she was going to pull out all the stops to stop him. And then when it was her own constituent who put forth the unsubstantiated allegation regarding teenage sexual assault, she was very much promoting that as a reason to not confirm Brett Kavanaugh. And she kept it going even after his eventual confirmation.
And when that was proven to not be true, what did she do at that point?
Well, I don't know if you'd say it was proven not to be true so much as there was never any evidence in support of it other than the claim made by Christine Blasey Ford. And there was a lot of evidence against the claim. Many people looked at that situation as one of the worst experiences they've ever seen in the United States Senate. It was understandable that liberal Democrats such as Kamala Harris, might not want someone like Kavanaugh on the court. But the lengths that they were willing to go to not just keep him off the court, but destroy his life and his relationship with his family and his reputation, that horrified a lot of people because they felt, all fair in politics. But when you go to that level, that's really egregious. And so it remains something that a lot of Americans just look back in horror upon. A year later, after he was confirmed and had already served on the court for a year, Kamala Harris actually tried to impeach Brett Kavanaugh. She just was not going to let it go, even though there was never any evidence that came out in support of these allegations, and certainly not, a year later.
Molly Hemingway, the Washington Examiner, in a piece that they put out today, said that she is the cancel culture cop. They saying that Harris is a vindictive culture war cop whose political career has been built upon punishing those she finds deplorable. Given what you've seen there with Kavanaugh and her attack of actually crisis pregnancy centers in California, where she tried to drive them out of business, shutting them down. I mean, do you think she would use that power as vice president to go after those who she opposes and stands in the way of abortion?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are concerned about some of the authoritarian impulses they're seeing on the American left right now. And Kamala Harris is actually someone who has put force behind some of her authoritarian instincts. I think a good example of this is her move to imprison David DeLeiden, or to persecute David DeLeiden, who's a journalist who exposed some of the lawbreaking at Planned Parenthood clinics in the state of California. And her support of abortion was such, she really moved to try to destroy his life just for his journalism. You know, we live in a time when people are very concerned about people speaking against journalists as if that is a horrible threat to the First Amendment. And that's an understandable concern. But here we have someone who actually has taken action against journalists and tried to persecute them if they expose the wrongdoing of her political allies. I think that is something that definitely Americans should be aware of, that, you know, California is a big state. And if she could accomplish that in California, what she could accomplish in the White House in terms of persecuting her political opponents is something that I think legitimately concerns a lot of people.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Molly Hemingway, my guest. She is senior editor at The Federalist and author, co-author of The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Let me just springboard off of that, Molly. When you look at the Supreme Court and you look at the judicial nominees and the that this administration has placed onto the bench, by and large, what we would call constitutionalist, strict constructionalist, structionist, textualist, however you want to describe them, this would be one of those areas where there would be a clear contrast between a Trump administration and a Biden-Harris administration.
I wish that every politician from here on out would do what President Trump did in 2016 when he was a candidate, which is put forth a list of people that he would select from, he or she would select from, should they be president and there be a Supreme Court opening. A lot of Americans took a chance on President Trump precisely because he put forth this list. Yeah. And it accrued to his benefit to be that transparent about it. One in four of his voters said the Supreme Court was a reason for voting, was their main reason for voting for him. It would also be good to know what Democratic politicians are thinking in terms of who they want to put on the court, to have that level of transparency. Because as the Supreme Court becomes more and more important in terms of affecting the lives of Americans, I actually wish it weren't that important, but it is right. That important. We would like to see more transparency so that Americans can make a full decision. But the judicial nominations of President Trump are easily one of his most significant accomplishments in the minds of conservative voters. And it's not just the Supreme Court picks. It's all of those federal judges at the circuit and district level that someday might become a Supreme Court justice, but otherwise are affecting people's lives day to day.
I think you're absolutely right. One of his greatest accomplishments, and long-lasting as well, and it would be a very significant picture of contrast, I think, to have the list of the two different candidates. Molly Hemingway, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We come back. We take a deeper look at Kamala Harris's attack on life with Susan B. Anthony next.
Today, moral relativism and political correctness are assaulting truth. How can the world have hope when believers themselves aren't clear on the authority of the Bible?
The Church of Jesus Christ always faces a tremendous temptation to deviate from the Word of God.
The God who speaks clearly expresses God's intent in giving us His Word, and the response that is demanded of those who hear.
Nobody ever encounters God and says, that was boring and irrelevant. When people say that about the Bible, it just says to me they've not encountered the God of the Bible.
Our faith is rooted in history, and consequently we need to use the evidence and never be afraid of it.
The God Who Speaks is a feature-length documentary from the American Family Association, which could bolster your confidence in the Word of God.
Churches really need to see this, really need to understand what the Bible actually is.
Available now at thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
What would it be like if every person knew that they were created in the image of God?
After 2 years in the making, American Family Studios proudly presents In His Image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality.
There are only two sexes, male or female. If you're conceived with a Y chromosome, you will develop into a male.
In His Image is a documentary featuring life-changing testimonies of former LGBT individuals.
In my most formative years of development of sexuality, I went through a brutal time of sexual distortion, molestation.
Visit inhisimage.movie to register for a free sneak preview.
Well, everybody, welcome to this unboxing video as we unbox my hormone blockers.
In His Image from American Family Studios is coming soon. Visit inhisimage.movie.
You're made in the image of God.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it is at T Perkins. All right, we were talking in the previous segment with Molly Hemingway about the attacks on judicial nominees and the advancement of a rabid pro-abortion philosophy, agenda, whatever you want to call it, from Kamala Harris. But there, I want to go a little bit deeper. Because the issue of abortion is like it, she is a true warrior for abortion. I want to play a clip for you. This is from an MSNBC town hall.
There are states that keep passing these laws. And so, and when elected, I'm going to put in place and require that states that have a history of passing legislation that is designed to prevent or limit a woman's access to reproductive health care, that those laws have to come before my Department of Justice for a review and approval. And until we determine that they are constitutional, they will not take effect.
In other words, she wants to make sure that states, which in the last 10 years have passed hundreds of pro-life laws. In fact, in the last 10 years, we've seen almost a third of all pro-life laws passed since Roe v. Wade. She wants to give the federal government the ability to give clearance to states or deny clearance on any pro-life legislation. Join me now to talk more about this is the president of the Susan B. Anthony List, the author of the soon-to-be-released book, Life is Winning, Inside the Fight for Unborn Children and Their Mothers, Marjorie Dannenfelser. Marjorie, welcome to the program.
Tony, thank you so much for having me on. I love time with you.
Well, no one knows this issue of life better than you do at Susan B. Anthony, and let me just ask you this straight up. Is this a conventional safe selection for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris?
No. I mean, you've seen her. I have, too. I've watched her career. It began, she became nationally known when she was the Attorney General in California. What her primary partner in politics has been Planned Parenthood from the very beginning. And therefore, when she was the Attorney General there, she made it a very strong focus of her leadership there, so-called, to create legislation that would allow her to go after David DeLeiden and the Center for Medical Progress, and he was exposing the trafficking of baby body parts within Planned Parenthood. They're breaking all sorts of laws and basically trafficking in the livers and hearts, and I mean, it's just a horrible thing to even say, but that's exactly what they were doing. So this is where her soul is. I mean, not ultimately, we know what it will be with God. We pray through a conversion, but this is where she is now. There is no sense in which she is immoderate in any way. In the U.S. Senate, she has blocked every conceivable modest pro-life protection, late-term, born-alive, taxpayer funding. And, you know, you and I both were sitting in those hearings, Tony, where we saw her grill Justice Kavanaugh with the conviction that if we turn the Supreme Court, we're going to be facing laws that she now realizes could pass all over the country and could actually be allowed to come into law unless she sits as the in the federal office and is helping direct leaders on the federal level, namely the Attorney General, et cetera. Or she gets to review. She gets to say, we don't care what you think, state. You may want to pass protections, but we're going to review those and make sure they're overturned. So it's an incredible contrast, and that's a gift in politics.
Marjorie, let me focus on just one aspect of what you said. Was she voted, she was one of 44 senators to vote against the cloture on the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act. But then she turned right around after voting against that, and she introduced her own bill called the Heart Act to protect the survivors of dogfighting. Where she went, you know, to the great extremes of trying to protect animals who survive dogs, who survive dog fighting, but yet she will allow a baby who survives an abortion born alive to die or to have its life taken away.
Yeah, I mean, it's where the feminist movement went wrong long ago. It's departed from the roots of the original feminists, those suffragists in the very beginning. The tenderness that a most women feel toward humanity has been bulldozed over in so many ways by ideology and in politics, and instead supplemented or supplanted by tenderness for the rest of God's creation, which of course we have tenderness too, but none is more fundamental than the right to live that God ordained his creatures that he intended for the world. And so that tenderness directed towards animals, sure, we can get that. But when it's to the exclusion of humanity itself, it takes a lot of suspension of disbelief about how the world is supposed to work to even get close to how she thinks. And the truth is, Tony, and you know this is better than anybody, is that it is so out of step with rank-and-file voters in battleground states, in any state, right, but especially the battleground states, which are going to decide this presidency and U.S. Senate races all over the country, that I think, frankly, in the end, her candidacy is a gift. It's a gift because we have clarity between the two sets of people who are running to lead this country. And that is what, you know, politics is made of. I'm sorry for the contrast, but that is what it is.
You know, Marjorie, I think you're absolutely right. I do not think voters could have a clearer contrast with having an administration that has established a 4-year track record of the most pro-life administration since Roe v. Wade, contrasted with what would be. I would say, I'll just go right out there and say it, would be the most pro-abortion administration in the history of the country. Marjorie, thanks so much for joining us. We're out of time, but I want to thank you for the great work that you do at Susan B. Anthony, and we'll get you back on to talk about your book that comes out on August the 25th.
It's a privilege to work with you, Tony. Thank you so much.
All right. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. When we come back, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, takes us deeper into Kamala Harris's record. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia on American Family Radio.
If you want to get an idea of the ignorance of the Democratic Party and the left media, take a look at how they're talking about second quarter GDP numbers being negative, as if it had something to do with the economy. It's not so bad that they are so ignorant about the economy. What's bad is they just assume that every one of you are even more ignorant than they are. I wonder what they'll do in the third quarter when GDP snaps back to 20-25% growth. I'm sure they'll give President Trump all the credit for that. Or will it just be, well, the coronavirus is winding down and that's why. Anyway, as we head into the rest of the week, markets are going to be trading on I don't know what. They're not trading on the virus. They're not trading on any bad news that seems to be coming out. They're trading on good, solid economic news. We are seeing producer price indexes come out a little bit higher. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. It means that we are avoiding deflation, that there is still some balance between demand and supply. We're seeing some prices increase. That's a good thing for a good free market economy. Everywhere you turn in the economic data, they contradict what politics is saying about America. And the only thing that seems to be smart enough to understand that is, in fact, the market. Mark my words, folks, when President Trump gets reelected, the coronavirus will magically be over. The news won't be talking much about it. And you're going to see a surge in the economy to the likes of which we haven't seen, because it's going to go from a bottom to back to where it was in February in a heartbeat, and then move on from there.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Look for his podcast at AFR.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Right, one of the elements that was taken into consideration by GovTrack, which looks at all legislators, senators, and congressmen, leading them to label Harris as the most liberal senator, U.S. senator. She has only passed one piece of legislation in her 3 years in the United States Senate, and that piece of legislation is the St. Francis Dam Disaster National Memorial Act. And she ranks at the top among her peers in the number of bills that she has introduced, though, and measures she has co-sponsored. In fact, she was one of the first to sign on to AOC's Green New Deal, and also one of the chief leading sponsors in the Senate of the deceptively named Equality Act, which would torpedo the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act by basically advancing the whole LGBTQ agenda at the detriment of religious freedom in this country. So just how conventional, as the New York Times says, are Harris's view? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News, joins me. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Is Kamala Harris, is that a conventional pick for Joe Biden?
I wasn't surprised that he picked her. And I think if you look at what Joe Biden is actually advocating, and he has a lot of it on his own campaign website, he's actually advocating a lot of the crazy radical things she has promoted in the United States Senate. But I don't think it's a smart pick for him politically. And I do think it gives an opportunity for conservatives to point to all these radical things, like some of which you mentioned, that Kamala Harris has been promoting and co-sponsoring in the United States Senate. Truly radical stuff, which is, if Joe Biden is pushed on it, he will not repudiate, because at core, he actually shares her values.
You know, Terry, I had to chuckle when I read the New York Times analysis of the pick, and they had a caption there saying that she was one of the most effective senators. And I'm not sure what world they live in, but I mean, passing one piece of legislation in 3 years, I mean, I think she is an ideologue. I do think that, as the Washington Examiner points out, she is a great attack dog in advancing the left's agenda, going after anyone who would dissent. But I don't think she's an effective lawmaker.
Yeah, she's not. You know, here's a picture of what could happen. You mentioned the Equality Act. The Equality Act, which she co-sponsors, actually passed Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives. And when it came through the committee in the House, Congressman Greg Stube of Florida offered an amendment that simply said this will not, basically it said this will not allow boys to play on girls' sports teams. The committee rejected that amendment because that is part of the purpose of that bill were it to become law. So as crazy as it seems, if the Democrats were to take the Senate and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were to be elected and take over the White House, we would have a government that would pass a law that, as you say, would violate the religious freedom by forcing people to do things dealing with transgenders and homosexuals and so forth that violate their moral and religious principles. But it also say that a guy could play on your daughter's, you know, softball team.
Well, she has pledged to championing the LGBTQ individuals in her administration, meaning, I guess, transgenders in the in her administration. I mean, I'm not sure what all that looks like or what it means, but it's certainly going to be different.
You know, she wrote a piece during the campaign. This is a direct quote. She says, "And I will be intentional about appointing LGBTQ plus people, including transgender and gender nonconforming individuals, to leadership roles throughout my administration, from my cabinet to the federal bench and beyond." So it seems like she was literally saying she was ready to name a transgender person to a cabinet position. I mean, really? I mean, this is where we are in America, that this person is now the Democratic nominee for vice president of the United States for a president who would be taking office when he was 78 years old.
Yeah, and, you know, the vice president is, you know, a heartbeat away from the Oval Office. I mean, that's why they're there. I think in this case, it's a half a heartbeat away. And I think people need to consider very, very carefully her positions, because he's even described, Joe Biden's described himself as a bridge candidate.
Yes. Yeah, and he knows that. And like I said, I'm not surprised that he picked Kamala Harris. But it does provide an opportunity for Republicans and conservatives to draw attention to these incredibly radical positions that she has that Joe Biden, I don't think, would repudiate if they became in the forefront of the debate. And I also think when you look at it just purely politically, you know, Joe Biden was born in Pennsylvania. He's a Delaware guy. And we know that President Trump won Pennsylvania, which was a remarkable thing for a Republican presidential candidate. But President Trump also won basically all those northern Midwest swing states, which I believe once again is going to decide this election. I do not believe Kamala Harris will help Joe Biden at all in those swing states, including his Pennsylvania, where he was born. I think she will alienate the kind of person that historically, and even in 2016, was the type of person who was a swing voter in those states, who was a culturally conservative person.
Terry Jeffrey, we're out of time, but very quickly, one final question for you. Would you contrast a Trump-Pence ticket with a Biden-Harris? In your long history of covering politics, has there been a greater contrast between the two parties and the options to voters?
No, it's pretty dramatic. It's very, very dramatic, without question.
All right, Terry Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us. All right, folks, stick with us. On the other side of the break, we're joined by former mayor of Cincinnati, Ken Blackwell, to dissect this choice. Was it, what was driving it? Talk about that next.
We are living in unprecedented times, a time when more than ever, men need to follow Christ's example, to lead, to serve, and to be men of courage. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me and retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, a founding member and commander of the U.S. Army's Delta Force, this Saturday, August the 15th, for the Stand Courageous National Livestream event. You'll hear from speakers who have demonstrated uncommon courage under fire, both physically and spiritually. We'll dive into what it means for men to be a provider, instructor, defender, battle buddy, and chaplain. This live stream event is accessible to everyone. Invite other men to join you, whether you're watching at home, at church, or in a small group. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 16:13, be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men of courage, be strong. Register now or find out more at standcourageous.com/live. That's standcourageous.com/live or 800-225-4008.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now. We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute. No way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden, Executive Director of the Association of Independent Methodists.
And his hand stuck to the sword. Eliezer, one of David's mighty men, fought the Philistines while the men of Israel retreated. 2 Samuel 23 tells us that he fought so effectively that his hand was weary and stuck to the sword. The Bible says that the Lord brought about a great victory that day. Eliezer fought when everyone else retreated. How often do you feel you are alone in your service for God? Like Eliezer, if we fight God's battles with His Word, which is the sword of the Spirit, until our heart and hands are stuck to it, the Lord can bring great victory in our day and in our lives. Will you be an Eliezer?
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit aim2020.com.
I'm Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you, men, coming up this Saturday, a Stand Courageous Men's Conference live streamed. You can join us if you're in the Baton Rouge area. You can find out more about how you can be there in person. Go to tonyperkins.com. But because of the coronavirus and many of the events being canceled all around the country, we're doing a live stream. And so you can participate. All you need to do is go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and register. That's this coming Saturday, Stand Courageous Men's Conference. All right, we've been focusing on Kamala Harris and her record. We looked at her judicial conduct, or her conduct in the Judiciary Committee, and her attack on Kavanaugh and other judges. By the way, she's gone after Catholic judges. Brian Bisher, who was nominated for district judge in Nebraska, she went after him, basically saying he was disqualified from serving on the bench because, wait for it, he was involved with the Knights of Columbus, and that organization is connected with the Catholic Church that believes abortion is wrong. And for that reason, he was disqualified. In fact, some of her colleagues have taken her to task for a reverse religious test, applying a religious test. If someone has a religious view on life, on human sexuality, based upon their biblical teaching, they're disqualified from the bench in her mindset. All right, we were talking with Terry Jeffrey about the fact that he's not surprised that Joe Biden picked Kamala Harris, but says it's not a good political move. So why'd he do it? Joining me now to talk more about that, Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati and Secretary of State of Ohio. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you, sir.
All right. Look, there's nothing conventional about this pick. It does not make a lot of political sense because it is he didn't look to his right in making this pick. He looked far to his left and picked Harris. Was he forced into this by the party's woke cultural warriors?
Tony, with her selection, the radical left wing of the Democrat Party consummated its takeover of the party. It is basically driven by this notion that in 1619, America was permanently flawed by systemic racism, and that the only cure for America and so and ultimate transformation. And she has bought into it. Look, Kamala Harris is like Plato. You know, you can in fact shape Plato into different forms, different shapes.
I just want to make sure you said Plato, not Plato. Yeah.
But in the final analysis, it's still Plato. Yeah. She is a political chameleon. She's an opportunist, and she has given her body and soul to the radical left of the same cut as Black Lives Matter Incorporated, Antifa, and other agents of radical transformation of what we know to be, since 1776, the most robust, the most diverse constitutional republic in human history.
I'm glad you brought up Black Lives Matter and Antifa, because I think that's connected here. I think Joe Biden is being held hostage, or he's trying to negotiate with that left wing of the party, Black Lives Matter, Antifa. But to your point, nothing satisfies them. Case in point, Seattle. Seattle kind of ground zero in this Antifa Black Lives Matter. I know Portland is a little bigger, but it's been going on in Seattle. There you have the first black police chief who was over Seattle's police department, essentially forced to resign because they were cutting the department's budget. I mean, here's a picture of progress, a picture of success, a picture of what they say they're after: equality, opportunity. And here you have someone that has it, but yet they are trying to dismantle that department and driving this police chief out of office.
Absolutely, because the majority force within the Democrat Party right now, again, want the lawlessness. They want the disruption. They want the confusion. And one of the things that they think helps them do that is a move from the rule of law to this sort of lawlessness. And Tony, in the final analysis, as your previous three guests have indicated, her choice makes this a crystal clear choice for the American voters. You know, on one side, you have a party and a leader that understands that our nation is a God-centered nation. On the other side, you have forces, leading personalities and groups that believe our government is a government-centered government that, in fact, is run by bureaucrats and political elites. That's the choice.
Yes. But I think people need to understand that this is an insatiable appetite that the left has. As you said, it's not about accomplishing the stated agenda, but it is the unstated agenda of basically destroying the republic and all of the infrastructure for our country. There's no other way, and I think Biden needs to know, and I bring that up because of what happened in Seattle with the black police chief,
yes,
female, that Biden is going to be held hostage in the Oval Office to the demands of this radical left element of the party that hates America and wants to disassemble it.
And look, no matter what we think about the policies of Obama, just think about what a big contradiction Biden and Harris and their ilk are. This is the country that gave us, in 244 years, gave us a black president, has given us a woman who will be number two on the ticket.
Yeah, only the third.
You can't tell me any other democracy or constitutional republic that is as powerful where the opportunities have been created. But you know what? These folks don't care. They don't care about what a contradiction it is that they want to destroy the country that, it, you know, as Lincoln said, was not perfect, but it's perfectible. And Americans have understood instinctively what you, in fact, march on every day, and that is that good, great nations are not the products of great governments. They're the products of good people doing great things together in a God-centered nation.
Yeah, I hope people realize what is at play here. And that this is about a lot more than what we see on the surface. And I think with this pick, there's no question in my mind that Joe Biden is going to be held captive by the party's left wing. And they are those that, quite frankly, they want to kneel at the anthem. They want to topple the statues honoring those who have sacrificed so much for this country. They want to erase America's history and rewrite it. That's what we're looking at here, quite frankly.
Absolutely. On the one side, you have those who want a council culture, and on the other side, you have folks who understand that together we can build a stronger culture that, in fact, honors individual liberty and respects the family. Don't mistake it. This is a ticket that has bought into the notion that the nuclear family must be destroyed.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, she also wants to legalize prostitution as well. But that's a topic for another day. Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. All the best.
All right. Ken Blackwell, to find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. You'll see him a lot out there in the media. All right, speaking of all of this, religious freedom, that is a big issue. And we have seen a major reversal of the attacks on faith under the Trump administration. Although, you know, in our federalist system, you still see states making those attacks, California being one of them, where Kamala Harris was the attorney general. Well, I want to transition now to Pastor Rob McCoy of Godspeak Calvary Chapel Church in Ventura County, California. He has this past Sunday held services double the size as people came under threat of citation to be there and support him and support the First Amendment. Yesterday, he was before a judge there in Ventura County, and he joins us now to give us an update. Pastor Rob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you. We haven't talked in a while. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear your voice as well. I was actually up the road from you this past Sunday at Calvary Chapel Chino Hills with Pastor Jack. Oh. So I was monitoring your situation and getting text from people who were at your service. Let's jump right to it. Yesterday you were in court. What happened?
Yesterday we were in court. The previous judge had issued an emergency temporary restraining order to shut down the church. I was in violation, as was the church. The temporary restraining order named me and 1,000 unnamed congregants or visitors. So it's unprecedented, the order that they put forward. We violated it on Sunday. I was called into court with a new judge, and the county and their legal team had sought to beef up the restriction order by requiring armed deputies to take whatever means possible to shut the church down. And then they were also seeking for this Friday to be my contempt hearing so they could immediately dispense with me. Well, the judge turned down their request for armed deputies. No police officer wants to be put in that spot or have that optic of closing a church. And the judge was wise. And then the judge postponed my contempt hearing to next week. And the county was fearful we'd be in church again this Sunday, and we will be. And so that's where it stands.
Now, Pastor Rob, let me give you an opportunity to tell our listeners the fact that you are taking great precautions when it comes to what the sanitizing of your church, making sure it's a safe environment. But also, people need to know that even though Ventura County is on the watch list at the governor, this is a rotating watch list, you've practically have no cases there, and you've not had them in your church.
Yeah, we've been wide open. No masks, no social distancing. We do have ionization machines and UV lights, and we've got hand sanitizers. But we've been wide open as a church. We haven't had one single case since May 31st, we've been open, not one case. Our zip code where our church resides, 91320, on the Ventura County Emergency Data website, tracking all of the COVID issues, our zip code has the lowest number of cases in the county for residential anywhere else. And we haven't had any cases, no deaths, nothing. And now it's an emergency. But let me add this. Ventura County, 850,000 population, and the tragedy of a little over 90 victims, and we've cared for these families and helped with their funerals. And we take food to the shut-ins and those of high, you know, susceptibility to this virus, which is 65 and older. But we haven't had a single death under the age of 40, and the death rate in the county is 1/100th of 1%. And we've already tested 15% of our population. Of the over 8,000 that tested positive, most of them didn't even know they had it. 90% don't even know they have the virus. Of the 8,000 that have tested positive, only less than 1% have died from those who tested positive. So we have taken a virus that really hasn't endangered, and we know the portion of the population that's most susceptible, yet our draconian measures by our county government have shuttered our businesses. 65% of our businesses will never reopen. They're gone. They've allowed families that have an abuser abusing the spouse or the child to be sequestered with their perpetrator. People who need precancer screenings haven't been able to receive them. Mm-hmm. We've released felons into the street, you know, to just run rampant. And we've closed our schools and ruined lives. And people say, well, why don't you love your neighbor? I do love my neighbor. I love all of those who have suffered, and we're fighting for them. And we're contending with a draconian government that needs to care for its people.
Rob, I think you said this. You'll be meeting Sunday, right?
Yes.
And you are opening your doors. Why?
Why? When churches shut, there's a 5 times greater chance of suicide. We are a trichotomy, body, soul, and spirit. There's immunity by community. This is so necessary for the people, and it's cathartic. It's ministering, and nobody's being affected. We're taking precautions, and if you're 65 and older, we broadcast an FM station into the parking lot for those who are shut in at home. We bring them food, but everyone else, they can handle this. We know what the virus does,
and they want to be there. I saw it this weekend at Chino Hills, 12,000 people there. They want the fellowship. They need it. It's time for our churches to open and stand up to these tyrannical government leaders. I believe that with all my heart. Pastor Rob, thanks so much for joining us. We're out of time, but we'll talk with you next week, hopefully. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. To find out more about Pastor Rob, go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.